Today on the Debt Free Mom podcast, we have Claire Wood, and Claire has been, I don't know, we've been connected on Instagram for quite a while. I feel like I've followed you when your handle was lots of different things and followed you through multiple moves, so it's really nice to talk to you in person today.
Yes, I was thinking back, I think I started following you around 2019, maybe before you had your last pregnancy.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if Ruby was born.
Yeah, she was 2021, so okay. Probably.
Yeah, definitely in your old house, like old house, two houses mm-hmm. ago. And yeah, so it's been cool to watch your evolution, not just as a mom, but with Debt Free Mom and all the content you put out.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah. So you reached out on Instagram and said that you wanted to come on and talk about compounding. And it's an abstract term to just throw out, but how compound interest is not just about money, but about all different areas of life. So before we dive into that and fleshing out what that means in lots of different areas of life, can you tell us just a little bit about who you are, what you do, what stage of life you're in?
Sure. That's, I feel like that's code for like, how old really are you? I don't answer that. I'm 47 and I've been married to my husband, Ryan, for going on 24 years. And we have three kids. Our oldest, Thomas, is 21 in his third year of college. Our middle daughter, May, is 19 in her first year of college. And then our daughter, Kate, is 17 and has this year and one more year of high school left. Ryan is an active duty Army chaplain. And so you referenced my Instagram handle changing and watching me change different physical locations. Mm-hmm. And we absolutely love the adventure that we're on. But in terms of like money and life and values, moving constantly definitely requires some like precision and finesse with the day-to-day choices. And so I think that's a little bit of like where I was coming from with this idea of compounding, how that shows up in a lot of different areas of life for us, whether that's in marriage, in parenting, in professional life. And it's just something I've been very fascinated with for a couple of years.
Yeah, as I've followed you for a couple of years, I've been very impressed by really the resilience of you and your whole family of just moving, picking up your entire life. It's not like moving across town. It's like moving just totally new places. I can tell that you've done this before. As you share what that journey is of not just finding the house and getting the kids set up with bedrooms and stuff, but really planting yourself into a church or a community or a school or whatever it is. And that's just a really impressive thing as non-military people I admire that. Do you know off the top of your head, how many times have you guys moved in your years of marriage?
I believe I would need to go back and count it out, but it's 7 or 8 at this point. We were pretty stationary for the first 10 years of our marriage. We both started out teaching high school. I taught English, he taught science, but we knew there was like something more for us. And so we did that for about 4 years. And then he spent about 6 years as a youth pastor, which also involved like being the associate pastor and the janitor and mm-hmm. the fill in the blank. And so then around 2011, we transitioned away from that into full-time military ministry. And since that time, we have just been on the move mm-hmm. and it's been quite a culture shock for us, for me, for our kids. We were just very used to being like within a certain radius of our families and our mm-hmm. hometowns and everything feeling like comfortable and pretty static to the complete opposite. So
yeah, 7 or 8 moves in like 13 or 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow.
Our first few duty assignments were like 3-year assignments. And then after those first two, we've had assignments short as 6 months, and we have had the last few have been about 2 years. So
okay.
We currently live in Savannah, Georgia, and we got here this summer, but we're already knowing that in 18 months, it'll be time to leave again. So,
okay. Wow. As the kids have gotten older and they're settling into college, does that make it harder to move or easier? Was it harder when they were little or harder when they're older?
It was probably physically harder when they were young, just because it was more people in the car, more things to get squared away. Mm-hmm. But I would say like emotionally and maybe logistically, it's been a little harder with them in college. Just mm-hmm. I always say, I don't even feel like I know where home is because mm-hmm. my heart is in so many places. It's here with one of our kids and Ryan and the work we're called to do here, but it's also on two different campuses up in Tennessee. It's where our parents are. So yeah, there have been parts of it that have been harder. But again, I go back to this idea that like the intentionality and the compounding effect of good choices in a lot of areas of life do help make things like that a lot easier.
Yeah. As you mentioned that when you messaged me and said that you wanted to talk about that compounding, what areas of life have you been thinking about that or chewing on most recently in this compounding effect? What are some real life practical ways that that has been playing out in your life?
Sure. I would be remiss if I didn't say that this obviously starts with the idea of investing and that type of compounding, because I know I've watched you and Kyle start with your investing journey, and there are times when it feels like you can invest a little, there are times when it feels like you can invest a lot. And at the beginning, you aren't seeing that compound effect. And it feels like sometimes, why is this worth it? What are we doing? You don't feel the weight of those small decisions in the immediate now. And so we have been in that investing game for a little bit longer. And so we're starting to see that compound effect and the excitement that comes with that. And really what brought this to mind most recently is when our second child left for college. Like, we were all we knew she was academically prepared, but she was feeling a little trepidation about being so far from home. And it turns out she got there, she's thrived, she's done great. And Ryan and I have talked a lot about, it wasn't just the move to college, it was the years leading up to it and her preparation and her spiritual formation, her academic preparation and all those little things. So that's probably been the thing that's been most recently top of mind for me. But then as I've been thinking and reflecting on that, journaling about that, I started seeing how this is really true in every area of life. I have had some really slow and small professional years. Like, I always joke that I put the free in freelancing for many years. But I'm now seeing some of the 10 years of blogging that led to opportunities to do some free publications, which then led to some early paid publications, which has now led to a salaried position doing what I love. And so it's just, I think it's those little things, like when you pull back the lens or zoom out a little on your life, you can see so many places that compounding effect is present.
Yeah. I know in the book, The Psychology of Money, he talks about this a lot, about compounding. And one thing that really helped me to wrap my mind around it a little bit more, or actually to wrap my mind around why I couldn't wrap my mind around it, was that he was like, humans just think linearly. We just think this and then this. So he was like, you can add plus two, plus two, plus two infinitely, and your brain can do it. But if we try to do exponential growth, and we try to do that even a couple times, once we get to the fourth or fifth iteration of it, we just can't even come up with what the number is. Right. Or we think that if we see how big the number is by the fourth or fifth time we've done something exponentially, a lot of people will say, that can't be right. That's way too big of a number.
Right.
We just don't think in those terms of this exponential growth. If we don't have a good visual of how that is true, then if we skip the initial part, we don't get to be there for the upswing. And so as I think about what you just said with college, if you put in all these years when they're little and all these years in, especially like the teen years, junior high school, where you're like, am I even doing the right thing? Are we on the right track here? But then you have these major moments like moving to college where then she thrives and it's, oh, that compounding over time, even if it didn't feel like it was doing anything, really did. We just didn't see the visible effects of it maybe until there was that bigger upswing later. But it's just so hard to wrap our minds around that.
It is. And I would give two comments on that. Number one, I think sometimes what you said, the opposite can also be true, because I think a lot of times people, they see and want the big, but then they feel completely just stalled out with how to start. And so we've all probably read the Atomic Habits book, or we've all read even The Compound Effect by Darren Hardy, which I love. But it really is those microscopic, just slow and small and steady and repetitive little things that build up, which leads me to my second thought, which is mindset. Like, I think that is so key, because we either feel intimidated, like you said, by this exponential idea, or we feel excited by it, but yet don't have the skills or the tactical approach to get going on it.
Yeah. And if we're really excited by something, the thing that usually follows it immediately is, how do I get that now? If I'm really excited about that growth that happens, how can I, humans from the dawn of time, we've been trying to cheat the system, right? Like, if somebody can get it in 40 years, how do I get it in 20 or something?
And I think that's where I've tried over the last several years, or like, what are those, I hate the word hacks because it's such a word right now, but like, what are the hacks? What are the little brain tricks? What are the little, again, mindset shifts that I can implement today, where that initial $100 investment into my Roth IRA still feels exciting? Or where that, for example, with a parenting win, how do you start small to train your kids to do the things you want them to do for themselves? you have to break it down into such a small step. And then how do you get yourself excited about that? How do you get pumped up for it to keep doing it for the long haul?
Yeah. We have to just be disciplined about believing that the thing we're doing eventually will work the way we're thinking it will, even if we don't see it right now. There's this discipline and faith of, I need to know that this is the right thing to do, and I need to do it, even if it feels like it's not gonna matter much. When you talk about hacks or little brain tricks, one of my favorite ones is, I've shared it on Instagram a few times, but figuring out what $1 will be worth in retirement, right? Because that Roth IRA growth kind of stuff, again, feels so abstract. So if I isolate, okay, for every dollar that I put into my Roth IRA when I'm 33, what does that dollar become in retirement? And once I see that, okay, if I decide to buy something for $10 right now, instead of putting that $10 in my Roth IRA, I'm not giving up $10 in retirement. I'm giving up like $155 in retirement. Breaking it down to its simplest form, coming down to, I don't need to be obsessed with the how much I need total in retirement. Breaking it down into, what does the impact of $1 do right now can make me, because that's something I can wrap my mind around, is like $1 now becomes 15 in retirement. And so I can see that number, and that helps me to really have a correlation between what do I do today and what impact does that make on retirement.
One of your talking points that I love and so deeply resonate with, which is your care creates contentment idea. I feel like this idea that we're discussing with the compounding effect, it's another form of that. It's delayed gratification. Mm-hmm. It is the $1 now, $15 later. Which is, I think, a great thing to keep in mind. It's hard to do sometimes. Mm-hmm. And I think different seasons of life or as different things come along, sometimes we're better equipped to be in a mindset to feel like we can delay gratification more than other times.
Yeah.
If you can keep that bigger picture in mind. And I always feel like it's so important to just initially know, what are your values? What are your values as a family, as a parent, as in your professional life? And the more you can like clearly articulate that, and especially if you're married, the more you and your partner can align on that and talk about it and write the vision and make it plain. I think that becomes easier and easier over time to buy in, even when you're having to try to buy in for yourself.
Yeah, for sure. So speaking of those like brain hacks or whatever, do you have any that you have found along the way of ways to, if you feel like your motivation is low or your interest in staying the course is low, things that you now know are those tried and true ways to keep you on the path that you know you want to be on?
Yeah, I would say I try to have a pretty good balance of future directed. Again, with our military life, like I mentioned earlier, I already am thinking about the fact that we're moving in 18 months. And so it's this constant battle of, yes, look forward, but also be here, be where your feet are, be here today. And so I feel like that's very true with whether it's our personal finance or parenting. I try to always begin with the end in mind, and whatever that is, whatever that big dream is, that big goal, it's like, that kind of motivates me on one level, but then I have to put into practice the day-to-day things that help keep me focused on that. And so some things I do practically, I'm actually taking a little Instagram hiatus right now, but I try to do a Sunday 10 good things list. So I'm looking back through my week and reflecting on, what is the good right now? What is the good right here? What are the hooks I can hang my attitude on and gratitude on? So that's super helpful. I also have a daily journaling practice. It's just, I can actually show you, I have just these very basic little composition notebooks, but I have them set up quarterly. And at the beginning of the quarter, I try to write out maybe 8 or 10 things that this will be a successful winter if. And it's some little things. It's usually some things that I know are going to happen, like family Christmas at home, or go see 2 movies with all the college kids and kids for their break. And I'm kind of forecasting those things I want to happen. But then day to day, I'm starting my day knowing like what I'm looking at for the day. And then I'm ending my day with a journal reflection that says, hey, here's where the good showed up. And it's helping keep me on track and aligned with those things I'm hoping for and wishing for the quarter. And then that adds up to the year, which adds up to the decade, which gets us closer to whatever that big dream or that big hope or goal is.
Yeah. I think that we can be so focused on where we're trying to go, like going forward. As soon as we finish something or accomplish something, we don't even pause to enjoy that moment, right? Or soak that in. It's just like, okay, I checked that box. Now what's the next thing? I'm jumping to the next thing. So I love that both of the things you mentioned give you a pause to say, what actually happened this week? What were the 10 good things? And I love that positive mindset too, because you're approaching that the question saying, there were at least 10 good things that happened this week. Let's reflect on finding them and writing them down. And that gratitude can also help with, I don't need to make any crazy changes, right? I can just stay the course of the things that I am doing, and that consistency will bring the results that we're trying to achieve.
So for example, Ryan and I have a big goal at his retirement. We hope to be back near our families, and we would love to buy a house in that area. And we've been saving, sometimes aggressively, sometimes we've had to slow it down. But so that's an example of one of those big goals, but we're not there yet. And we're years away from that. And so what I like to do in my like journaling and planning and dreaming on a small scale is just remember that today is my life too. I know I didn't come up with that. Somebody else, I'm blanking on who it is, but how am I celebrating today? And I can't just put all my focus on maybe one day having this house back in our hometown. How do I love my house here, even though it's a rental? How do I take care of it? How do I steward what I do have? Whether two of my kids are gone and I'm missing them, I still have one girl here, one daughter here, and how am I stewarding my time with her? Mm-hmm. So it's just all about looking at those small daily decisions and how we're choosing to spend our time that I think eventually get us where we want to be.
I love what you said a few minutes ago of be where your feet are. If I'm physically right here, I need to also mentally be right here instead of physically being right here, but I'm thinking about what I wish I could be doing in 6 months or whatever. As we're planning to buy a house next summer when this lease on this rental is up, and that's been a tension of mine in my head. Should we be house shopping now? Should we wait? And I think for me, I've bounced around between we should do it earlier or we should do it later. But it has, as I've given myself space to think about it, waiting is so much better. Like waiting till the lease is finished and waiting, if I wait 4 or 5 more months, like our down payment could be that much bigger. Once we decide that we're going to do something, we want it to happen right now, not a year from now or whatever.
If you're not paid once a month, why are you budgeting that way? A monthly budget ignores the fact that sometimes your expenses are due before the next paycheck is available. A pay period budget is built around your unique pay schedules so that your money doesn't feel like a mess. Create an accurate, realistic plan for getting the most out of each paycheck. Get started budgeting by pay period today with the best-selling budget template and mini course from me, Debt-Free Mom. It's available for just $9 at debtfreemom.co/template. I spent years feeling frustrated that my money wasn't working the way it should. It wasn't until I discovered the magic of budgeting by pay period rather than by month that my money started to feel stable. Pay Period Budget Academy is my signature budgeting course that helps hundreds of women take control of their home finances. Join today at debtfreemom.co/PBA and use the code podcast at checkout to get 20% off your membership.
Knowing that it's a good thing to do, but then also being willing to wait. I also think, I'm curious your thoughts on this too. I think just doing it a few times and realizing that it works then makes it easier, which that itself is a compounding effect too, right? I'm curious if that kind of resonates with you too.
Absolutely. Yeah. And to go back to my earlier example of like kids launching to college, I think that with our first, I have always felt like it was a huge contribution of my time with a high payoff for their success with getting college scholarships for me to invest in helping them in that process. And that's not to take away anything. Like they have been the ones who've been academically prepared. I've just come along for FAFSA scholarship moments about their junior year. But we went through that process with our oldest and it felt like, gosh, this is a lot of work. And what if he doesn't get in the places he wants to go? Or if he gets in, how are we going to afford it? And we both put in a lot of hours, like applying for local scholarships and institutional scholarships, helping him get essays written and edited and all the things. I don't know if many of your listeners have been through that process, but it's almost, I always say it's like an extra part-time job I take on their senior year. But having done that, And having seen the success he had and seeing how minimal our financial contribution had to be for his college, it definitely motivated me for the next time around. When our second child, she just went through that whole process. Mm-hmm. And as daunting as it felt to do it all again, I knew the payoff was there. Mm-hmm. I knew that if we just hunkered down and filled out all the applications and paid close attention to deadlines, and you can't earn a scholarship you don't apply for. So mm-hmm. we hit that really hard. And she also got a lot of scholarships. So now I'm about to head into my last daughter's senior year this time next year. And I'll gladly do it all again because mm-hmm. I've seen that payoff.
Yeah.
Literal financial payoff, but then also just the payoff of their success.
It feels cliche, but it's so true of the hardest thing to do is start. Of just do it. And then I think it was Adam Grant this morning posted something like, just make it exist and then make it good later. And I loved that because that hesitation to not, like with investing, for example, we don't want to do it wrong, but sometimes the desire to not do it wrong prevents us from doing it at all. And I think that applies to a lot of different things. And I can think of a lot of different things in my life that I would rather not do it than do it wrong. And so I loved that when he posted that this morning, just make it exist now and then make it good later. You're not supposed to be good at something the first time you do it. It's supposed to be clunky. It's supposed to take more time than it takes someone who is an expert. But then the act of doing it that first time, we learn about the process, we learn about ourselves, and we'll be better at it the next time.
And I think it's important too that we reflect during those processes. So whether it's the investing, whether it's the kids' scholarship journey, parenting, I do think as a fellow teacher, I know this, like that metacognition of how do we think about how the process went? And there can be a lot of fun and growth just in that thinking piece and that reflecting piece. And what am I learning along the way? Especially when you talk about like just getting started, just let it exist before mm-hmm. it gets good. Mm-hmm. To me, at least, I don't know if it's maybe just my wiring, but I always learn a lot when I can take a step back and then reflect on it mm-hmm. or discuss it with someone, or I don't know, think through it a little more deeply.
When I think about training to be a teacher too, one of the goals is that the more they reflect on it initially and understand that metacognition, the more automatic it becomes later. And that applies to us, to adults and kids. When we think about something being difficult when it's new, we think that the task itself is just difficult. But what's actually difficult is that it's very draining on our brains to just be in that metacognition, like, what is the process? What are the rules of this? What am I supposed to be doing? And as those things go away, it becomes, oh, I can do this exact same task 2 years from now, and it'll feel like I could do it in my sleep. We have that muscle memory, that mental memory. And so just letting it be clunky. I think about that with my first child, that every single thing you do with your first child is brand new. So it all feels hard. It all feels, okay, do I do the purees or do I do the solid foods? And then by the time I got to like my third, it was just like, oh, okay, they're ready for solid food. So I just put it on their tray or whatever. Right. And so it's the exact same action, but my own process of going through it was so much smoother.
And I have to make a plug here for the monthly budget. I feel like that's a perfect example of something that when you first start, it can feel not just uncomfortable, it can feel downright painful, mm-hmm. especially when you're like finally addressing maybe some overspending or debt issues. And I think it's one of those things that just the more you do it, the easier it gets. And then years and decades later, it's like, heck yeah, it's a new month. Let's whip out that budget. It's like an exciting time.
Yeah.
So that's another, I think, one that comes to mind for me.
I would guess that you have an above average gift at this because all of those moves that we mentioned at the beginning forced you to be okay with that uncomfortable feeling at very frequent intervals in your life of, okay, we got settled into a location and now we're moving and now we're finding a house and now we're finding schools and stuff. So I would imagine that difficult aspect of your life has actually gifted you and probably your kids and your husband too in being comfortable with being uncomfortable.
Yes, absolutely. It's one of those things that each time we move, it just takes me less and less time to get the house unpacked because that's down to an art now. Mm-hmm. It's less and less time figuring out where we're going to plug into a church because let's face it, we're not going to go visit a lot. We're going to find one that's we like okay and we're going to mm-hmm. just plug in.
Go for it. Yeah.
Same with the person that cuts my hair. I'm like, you did a fine job. Great. I'll be back in 6 weeks. It's just like those quick, you just jump in a lot faster. And yeah, you don't let as many things become hurdles to you as you look to settle in.
Yeah, for sure. Let's focus on parenting a little bit. For I have an audience that primarily has little kids. Right. So as you are in the middle of launching these kids into college and kind of making that soft handoff, I think, into the college that eventually is the hard launch into their adult life, what are some things that, as you looked back, you're like, yes, that felt mundane in the moment, but has had the compounding effect now that I can see them going off to college? What are maybe some things that some listeners are maybe wondering, is this worth it or not, that you're like, yes, it is, or no, it's not?
I'm going to give you just a few, and then I'll try to hit each of them quickly. So I could stay here all day. So for us, we're people of faith, we're Christians. And so I'd say first and most importantly has just been the spiritual aspect of spiritual life in our home and teaching and training them the importance of being in church, the importance of not just attending, but serving and rolling up our sleeves. So that's a huge one for us. I would also say academically, we spent a couple of years homeschooling just as a result of some of the places we lived. And it felt right in the moment. We enjoyed it while we did it, loved it. Also have loved public school. I've also loved private school. There's no wrong choice there. Mm-hmm. But I would say those early years where we were engaging them in the love of learning more than the habits of what it took to be successful, by doing that first and setting their mindset, it made the handoff as they became late elementary, middle school learners for them to take a lot of ownership and then run with it. I didn't interfere with a lot of homework. I didn't interfere with a lot of teacher emails because I didn't have to. So those very early steps of like lighting that fire, getting them excited about school, that was huge. And we have seen huge payoff, not just in their performance academically, but just in the way they're showing up at their high schools and their colleges. So that's another one. I would say just family values, like, and I don't want to step on any toes here, but we just opted out of a lot of things like travel sports, because for us, that felt like this is something one kid benefits from and the whole family is giving up weekends and thousands of dollars for the good of one family member. And so that was not a value for us. Rather, we chose to spend that time and those financial resources on traveling home to see family members when we've lived far away, taking vacations, staycations, investing in adventure. And so that's an area that I have seen that compounding effect. And then I guess maybe their financial education as well, training and teaching them. And that really goes to a broader idea of just training them for life in general. Mm-hmm. There were a couple of years we homeschooled that I literally wrote out like a monthly plan of like, these are the skills they're going to learn. And it was clunky. It was messy at first. When you train a child to start taking over some household chores, it's not great the first few times they do it. They're learning, and that's how we learn too. And so I would say I've never regretted the leaning into independence for them and breaking all those tasks down into the absolute smallest increments, the youngest we could start, and then just having all the repetitions possible. So with, again, financially training them about opening a savings account and not going into debt for things and spending wisely, laundry, ironing, cleaning the bathroom, like you name it. So all of those things I feel like fall under that parenting umbrella of things we've seen. And we're really seeing the fruit of that now that they're adults.
Yeah, for sure. I want to zoom in a little bit on that last one, the kids and money, because something that, so people who follow me and have little kids and maybe aren't yet budgeting. So right now their money is all over the place. They don't have a set plan on exactly like what their goals are. One of the fears about getting their finances in order is I used to say yes to a lot of things with my kids. How do I go about saying no? Or there's a lot of times people will say, I don't want to ever tell my kids that I can't afford something. I tell my kids I can't afford something all the time, I'll just say we don't have the dollars for that, or
it's not in the budget.
Me and dad are choosing to use our money in different ways than that. What are some things in that sphere of talking to kids in ways that aren't going to make them be like, oh, are we going to get kicked out of our house? Do we have food? That are secure and helpful, realistic ways to talk to them about the finite nature of money.
So we, from a fairly early age with our kids, as their ages allowed and as was appropriate for their specific ages, we have always just shared like our dreams and goals. Like we don't sit down and have like a family bonfire and talk about it, but through the course of dinners and through the course of family time, like our kids have always known, they've known what our calling is as a family and what our values are, but they've known what some of our goals were. So for example, we might say, hey, we're looking forward to a big vacation this summer. So they know what a vacation feels like. They know it's fun to be with their cousins at the beach. Mm-hmm. So that's tangible for them to then say, if we have to say no about something, or when we say no about something, remember, we're planning for a big beach trip, so we're going to say no to this so we can say yes to that. Mm-hmm. And using phrases like, it's not in the budget now. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I feel like that could be its own podcast episode, because mm-hmm. I think you have to start with the idea that the kids aren't the center of the family universe. Mm-hmm, they're mm-hmm. welcome part of the family. And I think that's like a huge just mindset piece and values piece. Because if you do think that they are the center of the family universe, mm-hmm. you are going to be feeling guilty that you can't keep up everything they want. And that's just not how we've chosen to operate our family.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think too, I can empathize a little bit with the fear, especially making a transition from if they used to live that way and now there's going to be some sort of life change.
That's true.
But the thing that I keep coming back to is, if it's something that would not serve them to continue operating that way once they became an adult, then I don't want to instill that in them as a kid, because I'm actually making it so much harder for them in adulthood than easier. So like, we might think we want to shelter them from ever talking about money, or at Christmas time, we want to make them feel like we could buy anything they wrote down on their list or whatever it is. But if I then take that exact same mentality, and it's cute for them to believe that when they're 8, if I add 10 years, do I want them thinking that about the world when they're 18 and right. they're making their own money? As soon as you kind of position it in that way, it's like, ooh, no, I don't want an 18-year-old to think that Christmas is buying whatever you want all the time.
Right.
Then I need to, that starts at 8.
And we've always had, I would say, fairly decent boundaries on things. Like mm-hmm. Literally this year, 2024 is the first year we have not done the want, need, wear, read for Christmas mm-hmm. because we're going to go to Universal for a few days and they're just getting a smaller showing under the tree. But we've literally done that for the last 16 years. And so they've known not to ask for mm-hmm. the world. We give them, I don't know, I just feel like we communicate pretty, mm-hmm. not over communicate, and definitely not when they were really little, mm-hmm. but their money is finite. Time mm-hmm. is finite. We have mm-hmm. boundaries on where we spend our energy and our time resources mm-hmm. and our financial resources.
Yeah.
And so I hope we've modeled that, not just financially, but in all areas of life, that there is this sense of delayed gratification, or mm-hmm. you earn a little bit of money for your mm-hmm. commission or your chores or mm-hmm. your first little part-time job. Feel free to use your money to do that if that's something yep. important to you.
Yep. Yep. I totally agree. I love it. I want to ask an unrelated question before we go,
sure.
because I like seeing what you make for dinner. I think that you are a very homey Southern cook, and I love seeing it. So I'd be interested to know either maybe one or two of your favorite dinners that you like to make for your family, or just things that you happen to be making this week, to give us some ideas if anybody's listening and in a dinner rut.
I do. I literally have felt from day one that my table is like the very best place to do ministry in my mm-hmm. home, to my community. Like, everybody likes to eat, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I have always taken, even though I wouldn't say I'm a great cook, I do give myself an A for effort. And I'm always trying to think of what are the favorites everybody likes, but then always trying to incorporate something new. So something, and that's been a huge adjustment, I'll say, with two, I was basically cooking for 5 adults and mm-hmm. one left, and then it was 4 and another left, and now it's 3. And then Ryan's gone a lot. So it's a lot of times just two of us. And I've had to really adapt my budget and my preparation, because we don't need like a giant lasagna for 2 people. We'll totally get tired of eating it. But a couple things on my menu this week, I recently made the Magnolia, Joanna Gaines Magnolia beef bulgogi, and I'm planning to make that again this week. It was actually pretty easy. And then we're a big fan of, I'm going to buy a bag of regular potatoes just about every week, and we'll make a loaded baked potato. Last night I cubed them up and roasted them in the oven, and I had some leftover like enchilada chicken, and we did like potato nachos. We did that last night, and I think I have stuff to do like some chicken enchiladas maybe one night.
Okay.
So those are my go-to. I'm a big fan, like you, like we have food at home. Eating out has just gotten so insanely expensive, and I don't even mind paying for it if the service is good and the food is good, but we're just continuing to see a decline in the service and the quality. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I cook at home a lot, and I try to use up ingredients that we have and be resourceful and a good steward of that too. So
yeah, That's awesome. Thank you. I knew you'd have a good answer. I was like, I'm not even going to prep her ahead of time. I'm just going to wait till the end and see what she's cooking because I know it'll be something good. Claire, I know you said that you're on a Instagram hiatus, but is there anywhere else that people can find you?
Not really. Like, okay. I have just become a curmudgeonly older lady. Like, I'm not really on Facebook. I had a blog, but I haven't kept it up for a couple of years.
Okay.
And my Instagram is private. So, and all my writing now that I do is paid behind a wall for some of the clients I work for. So just send me the good wishes out into the world.
Yes.
I'm not really
yes.
anywhere online.
Will do. And I would love to have you back. I think two or three times throughout this episode, we were like, oh, that could be a whole episode by itself. Maybe sometime we could have a kids and money episode or something.
Sure.
And then you could come back because I'm sure people are going to love listening.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on today.
Sure thing.
At Kroger, an annual Boost membership just got even better. Now you can choose from Disney Plus with ads, Hulu with ads, or ESPN Plus on us when you sign up. Plus, enjoy unlimited free delivery, double fuel points, exclusive offers, and free items. Sign up for a Boost membership today. It's an easier way to save, including new streaming options to relax with while we deliver your groceries. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Restrictions apply. See site for details.